Coming up, the bit before the theme music. This is the bit before the theme music. That was the bit before the theme music. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, it's just seeing a trusty old Red Rider carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people. Let's just get started with the interactive bit. What are you doing here? What are you doing? Get out. Get out. Get out. And scene. What was that? I'm going to have to stop the interactive bit because it's just... Let's just move on. Right, so I've got quite a few things to talk about before we get into the main body of the show. First up, I got an email from Scott Newman. He's the host of Tinsel Tunes. If you're not listening to Tinsel Tunes, why aren't you listening to Tinsel Tunes? The latest episode, really, really good, where they talked about God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. I wasn't a fan of that song before, but then when they talked about it and they played some of the other versions, I thought, actually, quite like this song. It's quite interesting. So check it out. Definitely go and check out Tinsel Tunes. Scott sent me an email and it had a picture in it of like an end, they call it an end cap, don't they? You knock at the end of the aisle where you've got like this stuff in a shop. And it was like they've already had the Christmas stuff out. And you might think, well, we're halfway through August now. Yeah, we are halfway through August, but Scott sent me this about 3 weeks ago. So it's like back in July, and it wasn't Christmas in July. It wasn't, because they would have had that out before then. Yeah, Scott sent it to me on the 28th of July, and it was a shop called Joanne, which I believe, I've never heard of it, but I believe is like a craft store. And I know like the craft places, they get their Christmas stuff out earlier than other places, because if you're going to be making stuff, you need that extra bit of time to do it. But this picture he sent was just of Christmas decorations. It wasn't crafty stuff. So I think that's a little bit early. You know, I say wait till September, but I'm not in charge of these things, clearly. Yeah, so thanks for sending that through, Scott. If you've already spotted Christmas stuff out, let us know. You know, it's always interesting. It's not, to be honest, being a massive lover of Christmas, I should be happy to see these things again. Oh, it's on its way, it's on its way. Because it is on its way. It's always on its way. Even like, you know, Boxing Day, or as you might call it, the 26th of December. It's on its way again. Anyway, I got an email from Barry Grapefruit. I haven't had one from him in a little while, because he said he stopped listening to the show. And this is what it says. Dear Jack, as you know, I have stopped listening to your show many weeks ago, but to my horror and dismay, you turned up on one of my favourite shows, The Advent Calendar House. It's one thing you ruining your own show, but why do you have to ruin other people's shows as well? Please desist from turning up on other people's shows, or at least give me prior warning so I know not to listen. Yours, Barry Grapefruit. Don't know what to say to that. Do you know what? I really enjoyed being on the Advent Calendar House. I've talked about it enough, and I really did. I listened to it twice. And then he goes and says that. So, thanks, Barry. I never bothered replying. And he won't hear this because he doesn't listen to the show. So there's that. I also received an email from our anonymous technology correspondent. And he sent me a clip of a version of The 12 Days of Christmas. I think he was inspired after the girls sung it for you in the last episode. And it's really funny. I'm not going to go into it on the show. It's a guy called Justin Edwards who has a character, a stage character, he does a comedy character called Jeremy Lyon, who's like a children's entertainer, and he's singing The 12 Days of Christmas and he takes a shot on every verse. So yeah, I'll put it on Facebook and you can check it out. I haven't been doing a lot on Facebook lately. I do mean to, and then I forget. So keep your eye open for that one. Or if not, don't bother waiting until I put it on Facebook and just type into YouTube now, Jeremy Lyon, 12 Days of Christmas. Pretty straightforward, isn't it? Thanks for that, our anonymous technology correspondent. It was good to hear from him. I also got an email from a chap called Hugh Davis, and there's a few things I want to cover about his email. The first one, he sent me a link to an article about a new Netflix version of A Christmas Carol they're doing. It's computer generated, and it appears, from what I could gather, to be a version of Scrooge the musical, the one that starred Albert Finney, which I covered earlier this year. Because from what I can gather, they used the same songs, so I'm guessing it's the same story and everything. So that'll be interesting to see when that comes out. So thanks for sending that through, Hugh. He also sent me a couple of versions of A Christmas Carol for me to cover, and I'll be looking at one of those later on in this episode. And he asked me, well, let me read out what he put. I have a Father Christmas related question. I'm from the US and I know Father Christmas is parallel to Santa, but when I was growing up, the look was a little different. Longer coat with more of a hood for Father Christmas versus the two-piece furry red with white trimming for Santa Claus. And the two were not spoken of interchangeably. I find now that a search for one automatically brings in the other. For example, I was looking on eBay for a Father Christmas decoration a few years back and it kept coming up with Santa items. Is that laziness, ignorance, convenience for sellers hoping to draw attention? Or are the two now referred to interchangeably, no matter how they're dressed or if they're from the UK or the US? Well, that is something I'm keen to address, actually. So let me lay it out to you. When I was a kid, I sort of saw Father Christmas and Santa Claus when I was a very young kid as sort of being, even though I knew they were the same, I sort of saw them as different. In the way that you described Father Christmas, I sort of did see him as being slimmer and taller with a hood and a long cloak rather than a two-piece suit with a hat like you see Santa Claus generally dressed. So it's very interesting that you sort of saw it the same way as I did as a young child. But now, and as I got older, like, you know, sort of when I was 6, 7, 8, I suppose, Santa Claus and Father Christmas, exactly the same. My daughters, if they're referring to Santa or Father Christmas, they mean exactly the same thing. I don't know if in their little minds they see Father Christmas and Santa Claus differently, but I don't imagine they do, because when I was younger, there was more emphasis on referring to him as Father Christmas. Now I'd say it's 50-50. So yeah, I think the girls know Father Christmas and Santa Claus is one and the same thing, and they do use it interchangeably. So I guess, yeah, that's a UK thing. In the States, it's more seen that Father Christmas is what we call him, but no, it's not. We call him Santa or Father Christmas. Yeah, there you go. So thanks for that, and I hope I sort of cleared that up for you. If there's any UK listeners that disagree with what I've just said, I'd love to hear from you, and you can let me know what your thoughts are on it. So the last thing I want to talk about before I get into the show, it's not Christmas related, it's my Bat film related. And I got quite a few emails, and when I say quite a few, like, I don't know, 7, 8, so that for me that's quite a few emails from people saying, yeah, I'll have a look at your crappy old Batman film. I sent out the clips, it's all gone very quiet. I think one person said, yeah, they were quite funny. Actually, no, it's 2 or 3 people, but generally, from all the people I sent the clips to, most of them have gone very, very quiet, which I think suggests that my Bat film is really crap. Yeah. I mean, you can't see the whole film, you're just getting clips, and I think some of the clips that are on YouTube aren't even in the actual film. But, yeah. So, that's a shame, but it's something, isn't it? Yeah. Should we just start the show? Let's just start the show.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Like I mentioned earlier, Hugh Davis sent me in a couple of suggestions for versions of A Christmas Carol he wanted me to cover. Now, the other one that I'm not covering is the Blackadder Christmas Carol. Now, I will at some point cover it, but I know there's a lot of other Christmas podcasts that have already looked at it, and I don't want to sort of step on their toes, so maybe somewhere down the line I will. But today, I'm going to be looking at the other one he recommended, which was Carry On Christmas from 1969. Now, if you're not familiar with the Carry On films, they were a series of films that ran from, I believe, 1958 to 1978, roughly. And they actually did another one in 1992. Was it 2? 94? Carry On Columbus, that one was. But they did like 31 films in this series. And I think it's still the longest running series of... Yeah, it is. It's the longest running series of films ever in the UK. Even though every story was different, I think maybe one or two were like sequels. I think Carry On Nurse and Carry On Again Nurse or something, I don't know. Anyway, it was the longest running film series. They did 31 films, and then they did a couple of, well, I say a couple, they did 4 Christmas specials, and they also did a TV series that a lot of people might not be aware of. It was called Carry On Laughing, and they did 2 series of that. One was 6 episodes, one was 7 episodes. And I think that was because, like, the popularity was waning in the cinema, so they figured, well, let's go and try our luck on TV. So, yeah, in 1969, this was the same year, they'd actually released 2 Carry On films. They'd released Carry On Camping, which was, I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's the most successful one in the whole series. Carry On Camping, and then Carry On Doctor, and then at Christmas they released Carry On Christmas, which was a take on Scrooge. Now, apparently when this was originally written, it was going to be quite close-ish to the story of Scrooge, but they changed it a lot. And this is very unlike the story of Scrooge, mainly when the ghosts visit, but the character of Scrooge is the same. So you've got Sid James as Scrooge. Sid James, if you're not familiar with Sid James, he has a face like a prune. And I think he had a face like a prune from about the age of 20, because he was in the Carry On films early on and he always looked the same, with just like an incredibly wrinkled up face and a very dirty laugh as well. Have a listen to this. That's Sid James in a nutshell. So Sid James plays Ebenezer Scrooge, and we don't get any portly gentleman. There is a bit where there's a guy begging in the street and Scrooge comes up and he goes, "Oh, how about something for Christmas, Mr. Scrooge?" And Scrooge goes, "Oh, that's great, thanks, I'll take it." And he takes all his money. And then the guy says this.
"That's my only means of support."
And then Scrooge says this.
"Oh, well, you won't need that one, will you?"
And kicks his crutch out from underneath him.
"I'm a nasty bit of work, aren't I?"
There's no nephew Fred, and yeah, there is a Bob Cratchit. So Bob Cratchit is played by a chap called Bernard Breslau. Bernard Breslau, he was like 6'6". He's huge and he towers over the rest of the cast. And you might know Bernard Breslau from the film Krull, which you probably have never seen actually. But if you have seen it, he played the Cyclops in Krull. Krull was pretty much like Lord of the Rings, but made in the UK on a shoestring budget. And yeah, it was very, very bad. I've seen it a number of times, though. Yeah. Anyway, so Bernard Breslau, mostly people would know Bernard Breslau from being in all the Carry On films. Well, not all of them, but a lot of them. He plays Bob Cratchit. He's not in it much. I think there's only one scene where he's like, "Oh, could I go home early?" And Scrooge is like, "You can go as soon as you've..." And he lists off loads of jobs. So obviously, Bob Cratchit's not going to be able to go home early. And he asks for an advance on his wages, and he don't get that either. And then there's a hilarious joke where he prays to God for... I'll play the clip, actually.
"I now humbly beseech you to kindly send us something to warm our bellies and give us a bit of cheer this Christmas. Hoping for an early reply, I am your obedient servant, etc., Bob Cratchit. P.S. If you haven't heard me this time, let me know and I'll repeat it."
And then the doorbell rings and Charles Hawtrey is stood there dressed as an angel, and he gives him a present and he opens it up and it's like a nightshirt. So that was funny. I've got to say from the outset that this has aged terribly badly. I don't know if back in 1969 I would have been laughing along at it, but it... The humour in the Carry On films, very smutty, very bawdy, and it's just not what you see these days. And generally, a lot of the jokes aren't that good as well, but for that reason, it has aged terribly, terribly. I mean, this is 53 years old now, so you would expect it to age a bit. Yeah. Moving on. So Scrooge goes to bed, and then Charles Hawtrey turns up again, and this is interesting because he ain't Jacob Marley, but he's carrying loads of chains and he's rattling them around and that, and he is actually the ghost of Christmas past, which is interesting because the way they've dressed him up is very much like the ghost of Christmas past in the Alistair Sim version. He's got like a long white wig like the old guy in Alistair Sim Scrooge. And this is when we find out that this version of A Christmas Carol is very different to what you might have been expecting. So the ghost of Christmas past shows him someone from a year ago that Scrooge wouldn't lend any money to. And that person is Dr. Frankenstein. Now they've spelled it Frank N. Stein, which, you know, whatever. And the point is that Scrooge didn't lend him the money to complete his experiments. And then it cuts to this scene, which is pretty much a parody of like a Hammer horror story. And you've got Terry Scott. If you're not familiar with Terry Scott, he was very famous in the 80s on TV. He was in a lot of the Carry On films. He was also in a TV show called Terry and June, which was one of the most watched shows in the UK. And I loved Terry and June. Every episode, I loved that. Yeah, like that was sort of ran through most of the 80s. Really popular show. And also, you might know him because he did the voice of Penfold in Danger Mouse. Yeah, so there's that as well. So he plays Dr. Frankenstein, and his sidekick in this isn't like Igor, it's Dracula. So Dracula is played by Peter Butterworth. If you've never heard of Peter Butterworth, the only thing I knew him from was the Carry On films, and he was in a lot of them. And he never seemed to be like one of the main characters in the Carry On films. He was always sort of like one of the second tier ones. And then, so Frankenstein is also part Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, because he drinks his potion and he turns into like Mr. Hyde. And we see Frankenstein's monster, who originally is Barbara Windsor. Now, Barbara Windsor, she was also in lots of the Carry On films. In her later years, she was very famous for being in EastEnders, and she was Peggy Mitchell in that. I don't think she'd be particularly famous overseas. I can't think of anything else really she did. She was in Wurzel Gummidge as well, but other than those things, I don't really remember a lot of the stuff she did. But ridiculously famous she was. Sadly, she passed away only a few years ago. And she plays Frankenstein's monster, and the problem Frankenstein's got is she won't leave him alone. She's just always trying to hug him and kiss him, and he doesn't want any of that. So what he's done is he's made another monster, and this is the bit he's whinging about, is because Scrooge wouldn't lend him the money to finish his monster, but Dracula has bought him a present. And there's a smutty joke about there's one thing missing, and you're meant to think that it's his dinkle that's missing, but actually it's his nose that's missing. So they get this nose and they put it on Frank the monster, and the monster, they bring him to life, and he's meant to be like the boyfriend for Barbara Windsor's character, but instead he's not interested in Barbara Windsor, he's also interested in Frankenstein, and starts chasing after him. So that's the end of that scene, thank goodness. And then it goes back to Scrooge. Now we've got another scene which definitely was not in the book, where you've got four men dressed as schoolgirls dancing in the streets. So those guys are Terry Scott, Charles Hawtrey, Peter Butterworth, and Bernard Breslau. And I don't know, sometimes men dressing as women can be funny. Was it funnier back then? I don't know, but they're just dancing around, and they're like schoolgirls, and you've got Hattie Jakes, who's like the school mistress, or she's a nun, but she's obviously their teacher. And Hattie Jakes, interesting one for you, she was mainly famous for being in the Carry On films, and also in the long-running sitcom Sykes, where she played Eric Sykes's, I always thought it was his wife, but when I've been doing the research, it turns out it was actually his twin sister, so, and they lived together. So, yeah. But Christmas fans, you might also be interested to know that she played Mrs. Fezziwig in the Alastair Sim version of A Christmas Carol. And when she played Mrs. Fezziwig, she was only 29. Which is interesting, because Fezziwig looks a damn sight older than 29, so he obviously did very well for himself. Anyway, there's this scene where you've got these schoolgirls dancing in the street. That's hilarious. Then they start singing Good King Wenceslas, and Scrooge comes to his window and throws like a jug of water over him, and they all leave. And then it cuts to inside Scrooge's house, and he's going back in to his bedroom, and who should be waiting in his bed but Barbara Windsor as the ghost of Christmas Present. And they say this:
"Who are you?"
"I am the spirit of Christmas Present."
"Give it away. It's the best Christmas present I ever had."
So then Scrooge gets in bed with her and proceeds to sort of have his wicked way with her. But she's like, "Oh no, Scrooge, stop that. You've got to look at this. You've been a naughty boy." And she shows him a vision of someone else that Scrooge wouldn't lend money to. And now this time it's the poet Robert Browning, and he's trying to elope with Elizabeth Barrett. Now this is actually a true story. Robert Browning did fall in love with Elizabeth Barrett. Now, she lived at home with her parents, and her father was really domineering and didn't want any of his kids to marry, which, in my opinion, is not a good way to keep your bloodline going. But for some reason, he didn't want his kids to marry, and they had to elope together, and they went to Italy and got married. And the father completely cut her off out of his estate, so she never got anything from her dad. But she was quite a famous poet, and so was Robert Browning, so I guess they did okay for themselves. Anyway, in this version of A Christmas Carol, we watch a scene where Elizabeth Barrett is at home. That's Hattie Jakes. She's at home, and her dad is Terry Scott, and he's like, "Right, I'm locking you in this room so no one can come in, but who should come down the chimney but Father Christmas?" But really, he takes his robe off, and underneath it's Robert Browning, as played by Frankie Howard. Now, if you're not familiar with Frankie Howard, He was a very famous comedian for many, many years in the UK. He died in the 90s, but he was very well known for a TV series called Up Pompeii, which was taken from a film, or was it the film came afterwards? Also called Up Pompeii. And he was in a few other films as well that were similar to the Carry On films, but they all began with Up. So there was Up the Chastity Belt and Up the Front as well. They might have been the only ones, I don't know, I've had a brief look into it. Anyway, Frankie Howard comes in and, oh dear, I don't know what to say about it. It's just him with Elizabeth Barrett, and he sort of explains that he hasn't got any money because Scrooge won't lend it to him. I mean, I'm guessing there are other money lenders in London, so really it's not just Scrooge's fault, but that's what he's complaining about. And then the dad's gonna come in, so he runs out the back, and then she, oh dear, I can't go into it because it makes no sense really, but he comes back in as a doctor because Hattie Jakes has fainted, and then, oh dear, he's pretending to be a doctor and he sends the dad off to go and get like a load of medicine and stuff, and they're going to run away, and then the dad comes back in and shoots Frankie Howard, which doesn't make a lot of sense because that's not what happened in the real story of Robert Brown. And I can't, do you know what, I'm moving on, this is just stupid. They can't, I'm angry. I was expecting a version of A Christmas Carol so I could dissect it, but instead I'm dealing with this crud. Right, cuts back to Scrooge. This time we get the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, and that is Bernard Breslau dressed up pretty much like Jimi Hendrix, and he's like this hippie character talking in like a real hippie manner. I'll play a little bit of it for you.
Oh, no, not another one.
Greetings and salutations, Daddy-O. Right, would you believe I am the spirit of Christmas to come?
Oh, blimey, gardening club.
Yeah, so you got that, haven't you? And this time, he shows the future. I don't know how many years it is in the future, probably like next couple of days, the way this has been going. But it's like a Cinderella parody, so they're all talking in rhyme. And we've got Barbara Windsor again. She's cleaning the floor. She says this.
Look at me then, poor old cinders, scrubbing floors and cleaning windows, always wearing the same old rag. Isn't life a bleeding drag?
And then the ugly sisters come in and they're like having a go at her. And she wants to go to the ball, but she can't go to the ball because Scrooge, I don't know, maybe she wants to get some money off Scrooge. Scrooge turns up actually in this scene and he's trying to like get her to pay him in kind. And she's like, oh, I'd never do something like that. And then like Buttons turns up and it's Charles Hawtrey again. This time he's dressed as Aladdin because that's the joke, I don't know. And he's got a lamp and he rubs it. And who should turn up but the fairy godmother? And this time it's Frankie Howard again playing the fairy godmother. It's quite funny-ish, but it's not funny. It's, you know, they're trying to get a big laugh out of a bloke dressed as a woman. I mean, we've just had that with the two ugly sisters. That was Peter Butterworth and Terry Scott again. Is this making any sense to you? I'm just going on through this. And are you there thinking, I've no idea what this is. None of this makes sense. It doesn't make sense. I know that. I'm trying to make it make sense, but it's very difficult. Even if you watch it, you sort of think, that doesn't make sense. Anyway, so the fairy godmother's there. Then Scrooge turns up again, and he's like trying to drag Cinderella away so he can have his wicked way with her. And the fairy godmother waves her wand, and Scrooge lets go of Cinderella. And he's like, oh, what's going to happen now? And the fairy godmother goes and pulls some sort of face, and she starts to try and grab hold of Scrooge, and she wants to get in with Scrooge instead. So then Scrooge wakes up like, oh, I can't let that happen. I can't have some fairy godmother, who's actually a bloke dressed as a fairy godmother, have her wicked way with me. Oh, I better go and give everyone my money. So he takes all his money in a chamber pot, goes downstairs into the street, and there's a lady there, Hattie Jakes again. He goes up to her and they have a bit of a conversation, and she thinks he's trying to solicit her with money for sexual favours. And he's like, no, I just want you to have the money. She starts screaming. Policeman turns up. It's Bernard Breslau, and he says, oh, we'll have none of this. And he takes him away, and that's the end. Thank goodness that's the end. I tell you what, I'm not going to be watching this one again. I am not. If you want to watch it, It's not on YouTube, but it is on Daily Motion. And I don't know if you watch Daily Motion. The amount of adverts that was coming up was ridiculous. You'd get through like 5 minutes, another advert. I know the adverts are short, but I don't have to keep sitting through. And it's the same adverts. So let's not talk about that. There's not really much else I can say about this. You know, that was it. That was the first ever Carry On Christmas. They did three others afterwards. I don't know if I'll ever cover those. It's not going to be part of the Christmas Carol segment if I do, because they weren't based on a Christmas Carol. To be honest, I'm just glad I don't have to talk about it anymore, because it wasn't good. It wasn't. It's aged, and I don't know. It was nice seeing all those old classic actors from the Carry On films. I will give it that. And, you know, the sad thing is every single one of them has died. With the passing of Barbara Windsor a few years ago, that's the lot of them now. They've all gone. I think Jim Dale is the only stalwart of the Carry On films that we've still got, and he sort of came later on in the series. But there you go. That was Carry On Christmas. Let's carry on with the show. How's that?
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Here he is, everybody. It's my mate Bob Baker, and he's going to be talking about another word that might have a different meaning on either side of the pond. I won't tell you what it is, because Bob will tell you. Here we go.
So I am always telling myself that I really should stop drinking. But then I realize I am not about to start listening to some drunk who talks to himself. So I am excited today on Do You Hear What I Hear? Because we are going to talk about Nick. You know, Nick. What do you think of when I say that? I bet in our Yule File community here on Total Christmas, we all immediately thought of our favorite Turkish bishop. You know, the real Father Christmas. But no, I'm not talking about that guy. When the Brits use the term Nick, they don't mean the saint. In fact, it's just the opposite. It's not about giving at all. It's about taking, and without permission. Nick in the UK is slang, meaning to steal, such as Frosty's hat got nicked by the magician. Now for Americans, when we say Nick, we mean to cut something, like when you nick yourself shaving. Which brings us back to St. Nicholas. There is a story of an evil butcher who nicked three children and then gave them some more serious nicks and tossed them into a salt barrel. Well, our patron saint went to the butcher shop, put his hand over the barrel, and brought those young boys back together and back to life, earning him the title as protector of children. Not bad for a right jolly old elf. Cheers. And happy Christmas.
Another great one there. Thanks, Bob. Just a little aside there. Yeah, Nick, also, we refer to that as like the police station as well. And if a police officer is arresting someone, he'd go, "Oh, you're nicked." And then he'd take him down the nick. So, yeah. So, thanks for that one, Bob. And he'll be back again next week. Now it's time for this. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, it's everyone's favourite part of the show. It's the quiz. Are you ready? I'm just going to get straight into it. 10 questions, 10 songs, 10 answers, another 5 answers. That's 15 answers. And that's it. Are you ready? Here we go. Question number 1. What was the name of Tiny Tim's father in A Christmas Carol? Got it? That's number 1. Quite an easy one. Question number 2. Which Christmas song contains the lyric, "Oh, the weather outside, it's frightful, but that fire is so delightful"? Question number 3. I'm on it this week, aren't I, kids? I'm on it. Yeah. 1, 2, 3. I'm counting them. Here we go. Question number 3. In the 12 days of Christmas, how many calling birds are gifted? How many? Question number 4. What item was stolen from Westminster Abbey on Christmas Day in 1950? And I can tell you, it wasn't my wallet, because I wasn't born then. So that's one thing. Could be anything else other than that. Question number 5. You'd think I had these written down with the numbers next to them. I haven't. I'm doing this off my head. Yeah, I am. Yeah, here we go. Question number 5. Which Christmas movie starred Hugh Grant as the British Prime Minister? Question number 6. In which country is it tradition to eat a KFC meal on Christmas Day? Question number 7. Who composed the festive ballad The Nutcracker? And I'll give you a clue. It wasn't me. So, could be anyone apart from me. Question... No, I've forgotten now. Where was I? I think that's number eight, is it? Question number eight. Which Christmas song was recorded by Brenda Lee in 1958? Got it? Yep. Okay, question number nine. What is the name of the Italian sweetbread that is traditionally prepared for Christmas? And the last one, who starred as Scrooge in the Muppet Christmas Carol? There you go. I think those are quite easy, those ones. I don't know what you thought. Right, here come the songs. Number one. Okay, that was number one. This is number two. This is number three. Number four. And number five. There we go. That was some fantastic humming by me. Now, here's your answers. Question number one. What, these, some of these are really easy. It's the same, do you remember the other week? When it's like, some were ridiculously easy and some were ridiculously hard. I'd say the same with this one, actually. Most of them pretty easy. There's one or two, definitely one that I reckon would have stumped most of you. Here we go. What was the name of Tiny Tim's father in A Christmas Carol? Well, it was Bob Cratchit, of course. Question number two. Which Christmas song contains the lyric, "Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful"? That was Let It Snow. Number three, in the 12 days of Christmas, how many calling birds are gifted? The answer was four calling birds. There you go, the answer's four, right? Question number, oh dear, what was I, is that three, is that only three? Yeah, oh, this is a tricky one, right. Question number four, what item was stolen from Westminster Abbey on Christmas Day in 1950? And that was the Stone of Scone, or the Stone of Scone, but I think it's the Stone of Scone. So yeah, not my wallet, like I said. Question number five, which Christmas movie starred Hugh Grant as the British Prime Minister? Well, that was Love, actually. Question number six, is it? In which country is it tradition to eat a KFC meal on Christmas Day? Well, you'd know that if you'd listened to all of my episodes, because back in the first year, I did an episode on Christmas in Japan, and that is where they have KFC for Christmas. Question number seven. Who composed the festive ballet The Nutcracker? That was Tchaikovsky. Question number eight. Which Christmas song was recorded by Brenda Lee in 1958? That was Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. And do you know how old she was when she recorded that? And she was 14. Yeah, only 14. Right. What is the name of the Italian sweetbread that is traditionally prepared for Christmas? The answer is panettone. And finally, easy one, who starred as Scrooge in the Muppet Christmas Carol? That was Michael Caine. So those are your 10 questions. And these are the 10 songs. Now, the first one, I won't lie to you, kids, I've heard this song, but I could not for the life of me remember how it goes. So I had to play it on my phone and then hum it straight afterwards so I didn't forget it. And that first song was, oh, I don't know how popular it is overseas, but in the UK, you don't hear it that often. No, it's not one, I don't remember the last time I did hear it, like out and about, and like shopping or whatever. That was A Marshmallow World. The next one was poorly hummed by me, I have to say. That was Step Into Christmas by Elton John. Number three. Oh, this was interesting, isn't it? This was another Dean Martin one. And also, this was an answer to the question about the weather outside is frightful. It was Let It Snow. That was number three. Number four was Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And the final one, Do You Hear What I Hear? Do you? Because I can hear my cat in the litter tray. I hope you can't hear that. Anyway, he's finished now. So he's finished. Anyway, that was this episode's quiz. I hope you enjoyed it. And I'll be doing the same again next week. If you want to let me know how you get on, you can. You know, do what you want. It's your life. If you don't want to let me know, it's okay to keep secrets. You know, it's okay to keep secrets. That's fine. Now it's time for this. Here it comes. I've missed it. I keep forgetting to do it. I'm doing it now, baby. Here it comes. I just paused then. That was a pause for dramatic emphasis. Because I know you're excited, so I paused. And then I ruined the pause by telling you I was pausing, so I shouldn't have done that. Right, here we go. What do you call Frosty the Snowman in the summer? Frosty the Puddle. Yep, that was that. And now you're thinking, God, I wish you hadn't bothered bringing the joke back. Yeah, all right, just accept it. Goodness. Wow, this is an interesting one because I'm doing it as Christmas all over the world, but really this is sort of Christmas in the UK, but also in Ireland as well. This is an interesting one, this one. It's called The Hunting of the Wren. And this tradition dates back, there's reports from the 1720s of this going on. I don't know how much before that it was going on, I don't know. And when I first found out about it, it was based in the Isle of Man. Now, the Isle of Man is an island, it's part of the United Kingdom, and it's off the coast of the north of England, sort of halfway between England and Ireland. And it's quite a fair-sized island, and yeah, they have this tradition there where originally they'd go out on Christmas Eve, they'd start on Christmas Eve, at midnight, Christmas Eve, and they'd go out and they'd hunt a wren, and they'd get the wren, little, you know what a wren is, tiny little bird they are, get one of those, hunt it down, kill it, and then they'd sort of have like a funeral of sorts in the town graveyard. Now in 1845 they've got a report that stated that this has been going for centuries past, again, so suggesting that it was like in the 1720s this was going on, but at this point it was carried out on the day after Christmas, as I would call it Boxing Day, as many people might call it the 26th of December, but it's also known as St. Stephen's Day. And what they do, again, is they go out and they catch a wren, and then once they caught it, they'd all dance around in a big old circle and they'd be like singing. And this time they'd bury the bird at sea rather than in the graveyard, or just like on a patch of wasteland. And what would happen is boys would get the wren and they'd attach it to like a hoop on the end of a pole, so the bird would be like hanging down in this hoop and it might be decorated with holly or whatever, and they'd go door to door knocking on people's doors saying, give us some money for the wren. Now the story goes that the wren was known as the king of the birds. Now I'm going to tell you the story of why the wren is known as the king of the birds. So all the birds were gathered round and they decided they needed to find out who was the best, and the way they figured they'd do that is by seeing who could fly the highest. So all the birds are flying up as high as they can, going up and up and up, and the one bird that could fly the highest was the eagle, and he flew up to as high as he could go, and then when he got tired he turned around and started coming back down again. But the wren, who was so small, had hidden under one of his wings, and as the eagle started to fly down, the wren popped out from under his wings and flew up into the air, because he still had all his energy, you see, and he's up and above the eagle, and he's like, I'm the king of the birds. And when they all landed, and the eagle was all like, oh, well, you can't be the king of the birds, because I could fly higher than you, and I used my strength to fly as high as I could, and you didn't. And the little wren said, well, I used my wisdom to fly as high as I could. So that's the story of why the wren is known as the king of the birds. Now, that doesn't tell us why they wanted to go and kill this poor little wren, because from what most sources seem to think, the wren was like a bird of good luck, and a lot of fishermen would take a wren feather out to sea with them for good luck in the hope that it would stop them from drowning. I don't know if it always worked, but you know, it's probably better to have a wren feather than a life jacket, I'd say. I mean, I'm no fisherman, and if I was, I'd probably drown, but I'd be drowning holding my wren feather, wouldn't I? Yes, I would. Right, where does that leave us? Oh, yes, so there are a number of stories about why they had to hunt down the wren, and I'm going to read this one, which I found. This is on Wikipedia, but I also found it at another source, but the other source sounded very similar to Wikipedia, so one had obviously begat the other. I don't know which one came first. Many years ago, there came to the island a beautiful woman of the fairy people. She went all through the land, and wherever she appeared, she put such enchantment on the men by her beauty and her wonderful attractive powers, that they, one and all, left their work and their homes to follow her. When she had them all collected in this way, she led them across an apparently shallow ford in a wide river. She herself went across almost dry-shod, but when her followers attempted to cross, the river rose in fury and drowned nearly all of them. Upon this, the survivors, brought to their senses by the disaster, gave chase to the woman, seeking vengeance upon her. But she, laughing in mockery, changed herself into the shape of a wren and flew away. Some say that this particular wren was the first to be hunted, killed, and carried round for exhibition. Others, that the actual witch woman escaped. But it is generally believed to be a memory of this event that the wren is hunted and carried annually. So there you go. That's the story, apparently, of why they hunt the wren. Now, in the mid 20th century, this did die out and it lost a lot of popularity. But come the 70s, it did start to make a comeback. And nowadays, there's lots of different groups around the island that carry out the old traditions. And as many as 80 people getting involved and dancing and singing about the wren. Now, another thing I found was this song about the hunting of the wren. And I'll play a bit of it for you. Here it comes.
We'll away to the woods, says Robin the Bobbin, away to the woods, says everyone.
We'll away to the woods, says Robin the Bobbin, away to the woods, says Jack of the Robin, away to the woods, says Jack of the Land, away to the woods, says everyone. Where away, says Robin the Bobbin, where, says Richard the Robin, where away, says Jack of the Land, where, says everyone.
What shall we do there, says Robin the Bobbin,
what shall we do there, says Richard the Robin, what shall we do there, says Jack of the Land, what shall we do there, says everyone.
We'll hunt the wren, says Robin the Bobbin,
we'll hunt the wren, says Richard the Robin, we'll hunt the wren, says Jack of the Land, we'll hunt the wren, says everyone. Where away, says Robin the Bobbin, where, says Richard the Robin, where away, says Jack of the Land, where, says everyone.
I see him, says Robin the Bobbin,
I see him, says Richard the Robin, I see him, says Jack of the Land, I see him, says everyone.
In yonder green bush, says Robin the Bobbin,
in yonder green bush, says Richard the Robin, in yonder green bush, says Jack of the Land, in yonder green bush, says everyone. Where away, says Robin the Bobbin, where, says Richard the Robin, where, says Jack of the Land, where, says everyone.
So that song is about hunting the wren, where they're going to go, how they're going to bring it back. And I found a few different versions where the verses were different. And I don't know if you've heard of Steel Eyes Span, but they're a fairly popular folk band in the UK. And they sung a version of it as well that came out in the 70s. So yeah, that's the song from the hunting of the wren. And that is the tradition as it's carried out on the Isle of Man. Now, while I'm studying this, I thought, oh, this is an interesting one, you know, only in the Isle of Man. Then I found out that they also carry it out in Wales and in Ireland as well. And by the sounds of things, it was throughout the British Isles, but it died out in lots of places, but it's still going on a little bit today. So most of the Welsh one seems to have died out. I think there might still be some minor celebrations, but not a lot. And in Wales, the only real difference I could see was that they carried it out between the 6th and the 12th of January, rather than it being on St. Stephen's Day. And it's a very similar thing, where they'd carry the bird around from house to house. But one thing I read was that they'd carry it around in like a little house on the top of a pole with the bird inside it. And people would pay money to see the bird in the house. So, yeah. But then I'm sort of wondering if that might have been part of the tradition on the Isle of Man as well. It's very difficult. It's a very grey area, this sort of thing. The Irish tradition seems to also still be going fairly strong. And what would happen is the same sort of thing. Boys would go, they'd call themselves the Wren Boys, and they'd go door to door doing the same sort of thing, taking a bird on a pole with them, and they'd dress in their old clothes and they'd black up their faces, and they'd carry whistles and drums and make loads of music and sing songs as they went door to door trying to collect the money. I think the Isle of Man one had more of a ceremony to this, whereas the Wren Boys, it sounds like they're just more interested in going door to door to raise money. So like in weeks leading up to Christmas, you'd see groups of boys going around in the hedges trying to find a wren so they could catch one, so they had one for St. Stephen's Day. And quite often they wouldn't be able to find one, and so they might use something else instead, like maybe a stuffed one or a toy, or maybe even make one. I read about where they'd got a small piece of turf and just stuck a lot of feathers in it and used that instead of a wren, and they'd go door to door again to collect money. And then at the end of it, if it was kids, they'd normally sort of divvy up the money and share it between them. But if it was older people, they'd put all the money towards a big wren party, they'd call it, and they'd either go to the pub or maybe around someone's house. They'd spend all the money on having a big old wren party with the money they'd raised. There's also a poem that cropped up a lot when I was researching this in Ireland. Now, I found a few different versions. I'm just going to read the first one I read. They're generally similar, but the odd word here or there changes. So it says, the wren, the king of all birds, St. Stephen's Day was caught in the furze. Her clothes were all torn, her shoes were all worn. Up with the kettle and down with the pan. Give us a penny to bury the wren. If you haven't a penny, a halfpenny will do. If you haven't a halfpenny, God bless you. You probably recognised the end bit there. It's very similar to the song Christmas Is Coming. And also in that one, and I should have mentioned this earlier, in Ireland they refer to the wren as the ran. So it's spelt W-R-A-N rather than W-R-E-N. So there we go. So the story I read out to you before about the Isle of Man and the enchantress that all the men followed, that's not the story you hear in Ireland. And they believe that St. Stephen was hiding. I don't know who he was hiding from, and the story's very vague about that. But he was hiding, and a wren flew down and started making a lot of noise, like flapping its wings in the place where he was hiding. And so the people that were looking for him came down from hearing all the noise, and they caught St. Stephen, and they saw, for that reason, they saw the wren as being like betraying St. Stephen. And that's why on St. Stephen's Day, everyone goes out to hunt the wren, which I found really interesting, because it does sort of attach it to the holiday. So that is pretty much it for the hunting of the wren. It's a really interesting festival. Obviously, this day and age, no one is hunting live birds, and they stopped doing that many, many years ago. Now, it might be a taxidermied bird, which does mean, you know, they had to kill a wren at some point if they're doing that, or it might just be like a pretend bird. So, yeah, that is the story of the hunting of the wren. I hope you feel like you've learned something, because I certainly have. Now let's do this. This episode's recommendation is a podcast called The Illusionist with Helen Zaltzman, and it is just great. It is a podcast about language. Now, back in one of my very earliest podcasts, probably like the first 3 or 4 episodes I did, I recommended a podcast called Answer Me This, and Helen Zaltzman is one of the presenters of Answer Me This, but she's also got her own podcast, like I say, called The Illusionist, and it's so good. Every episode, she talks about facets of language, not necessarily just the English language, but she talks about the meaning of words, how language has developed over years. I'm not going to make it sound half as interesting as the podcast is, but it covers so much different stuff that you wouldn't know about. I tell you what, the best I can do is give you an example. Now, the word orange, okay, what do you think came first? Do you think someone saw the color orange and thought, oh, that looks like an orange, I'll call that colour orange? Or do you think someone saw a fruit and said, that fruit is a bright orange colour, I'm going to call that fruit orange? What do you think? Well, the fact is that the colour came after the fruit. The colour is named after the fruit. That's a fact. And there's other examples of that, like pink comes from another name for carnations, the flower, which are often pink. Salmon, we use it to describe a colour, plum as well. So, yeah, that is why we say orange. I never knew that, and that's something I learned on the podcast. So there's loads of examples of that sort of thing on there. It really is a great podcast. It's, most episodes are quite short. She's been doing it a few years, so there's a lot of back catalogue for you to catch up on. The Illusionist by Helen Zaltzman. Highly recommend it. And that that is it for this podcast. I really hope you've enjoyed it. Don't have anything else to say, really, apart from I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. I really do. Merry Christmas.
The best way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear.